This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
A UN fact-finding mission in South Sudan has uncovered evidence of violence and gross violations of human rights that may amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity.
That's Lisa Schlein on a new report on alleged abuses in South Sudan. Details coming up. Also, Senegal is getting ready for its presidential elections. Because of the postponement of the election, the chairman of Nigeria's Electoral Commission has urged the candidates to tone down their rhetoric. And Egypt hangs 9 suspected Islamists. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Senegal is getting ready for its presidential elections, which will be Sunday. President Macky Sall is seeking a second term. He beat former President Abdoulaye Wade in the 2012 election. Sall, who is 57 years old, has launched an ambitious development and reform program during his time in office aimed at transforming Senegal into an emerging economy by 2035. Among his 4 rivals, 59-year-old Idrissa Seck is considered among the strongest. Seck served as Wade's prime minister in the 2000s, but his 2 previous bids for the presidency have been unsuccessful. VOA journalist Salwa Jafir is in Dakar covering the elections. Today, she spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson about the preparations for the voting.
Well, the atmosphere is pretty tense. And I've been here since Monday night, and I can say definitely that I feel the tension growing as we approach the election day. Driving through town yesterday and today, you can see people holding meetings everywhere, supporting their candidates, chanting the praises of the one they support, and bluntly insulting the ones that they don't. So it's pretty intense walking down the street and seeing all these people screaming. As yesterday, too, I've been on the Boulevard de Corniche, which is one of the main avenues here, and I noticed that there's a lot of billboards of candidates, all candidates, the 5 of them. And most of them, maybe all of them, have been vandalized, except the ones of Macky Sall. So it doesn't mean that Macky Sall has a Dakar for sure. I'm sure if you go to another city, you'll see the same. You'll see people vandalizing and drawing over pictures of other candidates. But for sure here, I feel that Macky Sall is the favorite. Lately, there's been a lot of violence. Last week, there have been some one dead and a few people that have been injured during protests in the Northeast. But this week, it's pretty calm compared to last week. People are, meeting to support their candidates, the opposition, the NGOs, they're holding their meetings. So everybody's talking about the elections. You can security have been handled. You had governors of different regions of the country expressing their, the fact that they're ready for the elections. They've dispatched a large number of people to make sure that everything is okay.
Now, you were talking about the preparation, so it does sound like they will be ready to go off on time without too much difficulty in terms of the logistics.
Yes, I can say that they're ready. In any case, the media says they are ready. I don't think they're going to be any cancellation or pushing the date of the election. It seems like everything's ready. The ballots have been distributed. Security is ready to handle before, during, and after the vote. All candidates are calling for calm. Macky Sall gave a speech last week after the events in the north, and he called everybody to stay calm and get ready for the election so that the election goes smoothly.
Now, of the other candidates, is there any one of them who is considered a reasonably strong challenger to Mr. Sall?
I've been talking to people on the street and the people I interviewed so far. And Macky Sall is the favorite, although, you know, the polls are not allowed during this period, the pre-electoral period. But there have been a survey before in November conducted by an organization in Senegal, and it gave him 45% chance of winning. The other candidates, what I can say is, what people say is that Idrissa Seck is one of the favorites because although he's been in the system and he's worked for Abdoulaye Wade before, and he tried to be president, this is the third time he's running, he has his chances this time.
That was VOA's Salwa Jafari speaking to us from Dakar. The chairman of Nigeria's Electoral Commission has urged candidates to moderate their rhetoric with the rescheduled presidential election looming in 2 days. In calling for calm, Mamudu Yakubu said people are tired of hearing politicians fighting. The political temperature has risen steadily since the election was postponed just hours before the polls were to open last Saturday. Opposition allegations of cheating have been led by claims of tampering with the voting machines. In addition, the opposition has urged the military to stay out of the polling process. The election delay sparked speculation that turnout could be low because people have to vote where they register, which often is their hometown. Nigeria's main fuel marketing group has cut the price of gasoline to encourage people to travel home to vote. A UN fact-finding mission in South Sudan has uncovered evidence of violence and gross violations of human rights that may amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. The report by the three-member UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan will be submitted to the UN Human Rights Council March 12th. Lisa Schlein reports from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The report covers the human rights situation in South Sudan in 2018, but Commission member Andrew Clapham says it is not possible to ignore the more recent atrocities occurring in the country. He says the Commission is particularly upset by reports of renewed fighting in the Yei River area in central Equatoria between the government and rebel National Salvation Front. He says thousands of civilians have been forcibly displaced following what he calls a scorched earth policy. He says the warring parties reportedly are attacking villages, torching homes, killing civilians, and raping women and girls.
With regards to the rest of the country, I suppose we are a little more hopeful. Following the signing of the revitalized agreement on the resolution of the conflict 5 months ago, but the situation in the Equatorias remains extremely volatile. We continue to conclude in our report that there have been human rights violations, including, again, rape and sexual violence, and we consider that those crimes could amount to war crimes.
Cases of rapes documented in November and December show a marked worsening of sexual violence in several South Sudanese states since the peace accord was signed. Clapham says the commission also has received reports of sexual violence against men and boys, but notes these crimes are underreported compared to those against women and girls because there is a greater level of stigma. The report finds that rights violations, including torture, arbitrary arrest, abductions, and sexual slavery, have become commonplace in South Sudan because nobody is held accountable. The commissioners warn that as long as impunity remains the norm, these atrocities and the violence that feeds upon them will continue. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Reports say Egypt has hanged 9 suspected Islamists convicted of the car bomb assassination of the country's top prosecutor in 2015. News services quoted a variety of sources as saying the executions were carried out yesterday. Six other defendants are serving life in prison, and 13 others were sentenced to death in absentia. Hundreds of other inmates have been sentenced to death for a variety of crimes in recent years, and 15 have been executed this year already. The pace has picked up this month, with three people executed for the killing of a police officer and three others for the killing of a judge's son. Rights groups decried the executions, saying all of those executed had confessed after torture and beatings. As the Egyptian parliament prepares for changes to the constitution that could allow President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi to remain in office for 15 more years and expand his powers, the Civil Democratic Movement, a coalition of 10 political opposition parties, is rejecting the idea. Khalid Daoud, a leading member of the movement and former president of the Al-Dostur Liberal Party, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the movement's position and the opposition's effort to challenge the constitutional amendments.
Well, because Egypt has had a long experience with having a one-president system whereby the president never changes except by natural death, assassination, or a popular revolution, we believe that going back to the old system whereby a president stays for life means that we're not having any development in our political system or a shift towards democracy whereby we can hold the president accountable. Besides, the president Sisi himself, he agreed when he ran for president the first time in 2014 that he would only be in that position for 8 years, and we see no emergency or immediate need to amend the constitution that was already approved 5 years ago to allow President Sisi to stay in office up until 2034 in case these amendments gain the approval or when a popular referendum takes place sometime in early May.
Given the weak opposition inside and outside the parliament and the tight media control and a de facto ban on protests or demonstrations, how would the opposition gain support for its rejection?
Well, we hope to widen that opposition. We believe that many Egyptians are not happy with those certain amendments. Even immediately after those amendments were initially approved by parliament, as opposition groups, we started a petition asking citizens to sign their names to express their opposition to those amendments. And in a matter of 4 days only, we managed to get nearly 30,000 signatures. Besides, we expect other segments of the population, particularly the judiciary, to also express their dissatisfaction with those amendments, because the amendments are not limited to the fact of extending the presidential terms, but it also tightens the grip of the president over the judiciary, giving him the right to appoint the heads of the major courts in Egypt, namely the Constitutional Court and the Court of Cassation and the Court of Appeal, which I think is a very clear violation of any principle of independence of the judiciary. Also, the president will have the right to appoint prosecutor general. The president will enjoy tremendous powers that no other president has enjoyed over the past 60 years. But we expect for the first time, perhaps, that the opposition parties are going to call for the Egyptians to go and vote, but in that case, vote no, instead of simply boycotting that voting. And we still have some time. We still have 2 months. We also have the social media, which is the only remaining outlet for people to express themselves freely right now in light of what you rightly mentioned, the tight control over the official media or the mainstream media, whether private or state-owned. But at least we still have at least 50 million Egyptians who widely and intensely use the social media. So we're hoping and we're aiming to have campaigns over the social media to convince more and more Egyptians to turn out on the day of the supposed referendum and to vote no for those amendments.
Is there a way for the opposition to challenge the amendments in court?
Of course, that's another path that we're seriously looking into. As soon as those amendments become final, we're going to resort certainly to the Supreme Constitutional Court. And there is a clear article number 226 in the 2014 Constitution that clearly states that it's not allowed to carry out any changes in the articles related to the election of the president. And that's why we believe that we stand a chance to challenge those amendments in court, because, as I mentioned before, the Egyptian people did not go out in two major popular revolts in 2011 and 2013 in order to rebuild the old system that we've had for the past 6 years.
That was Khalid Daoud, a leading member of the Civil Democratic Movement, a coalition of 10 political opposition parties in Egypt. He spoke to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Senegal is getting ready for its presidential elections this Sunday. President Macky Sall is seeking a second term. The chairman of Nigeria's Electoral Commission has urged the candidates to moderate their rhetoric with the rescheduled presidential election. And a UN fact-finding mission in South Sudan has uncovered evidence of violence and gross violations of human rights that may amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The Executive Committee of Uganda's ruling National Resistance Movement has endorsed President Yoweri Museveni for re-election in 2021. The 74-year-old Museveni has been in power since 1986 after leading a rebellion. He will be seeking his sixth term after legislation a year ago scrapped the age limit for the presidency. The legislation sparked protests, and Museveni has cracked down on dissent. He once said leaders who overstayed were the root of Africa's problems. The full party will consider the executive committee's endorsement. It's uncertain who might challenge him in 2 years, but a likely contender would be legislator Robert Chagulani, a pop star, also known as Bobby Wine. He has drawn support from Uganda's youth, but was charged with treason last year, along with more than 30 other opposition politicians. China says it supports a Tanzanian court's sentence of 15 years in prison for a Chinese woman known as the Ivory Queen for smuggling the tusks of more than 350 elephants to Asia. China has been a key market for ivory but has cracked down on smuggling in recent years and last year banned all trade in ivory products. 69-year-old Yang Feng Glen and two Tanzanian men were convicted in the case. They were ordered to pay a fine of $13 million, double the value of the ivory, or face another 2 years in jail. The International Union for Conservation of Nature says poaching has caused the population of African elephants to fall by about 110,000 over the past decade. Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa has issued a chilling warning to lawyers and doctors who assisted victims of the deadly crackdown on citizens during the recent stay-home strike last month. Correspondent Adi Gondo gives us more on the story.
Speaking at a so-called thank you rally over the weekend, Mnangagwa vowed his readiness to deploy soldiers again to thwart protesters. The country's main labor body, ZCTU, Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, called the protest last month over a 150% fuel hike. Mnangagwa chillingly vowed to pursue lawyers and doctors whom he claimed were aiding and abetting those at the protest, which turned violent. Here, the president speaks at the weekend rally. Observers say that despite talk of a new path and a break from the past, the Mnangagwa government is nothing new. Kutatapulu, a lawyer and MDC Alliance legislator, weighs in on Mnangagwa's threats.
No, if you look at Robert Mugabe, he also threatened Mnangagwa. He said exactly the same words. So this guy is merely rehashing Mugabe's script. Mugabe threatened lawyers all the time. Mugabe blamed everything on lawyers. I mean, you simply have to Google it. When lawyers were threatened and accused of all sorts of sort of things over a sustained period of time.
According to Pulu, the problem with the ZANU-PF-led government is that it lacks a culture of constitutionalism. Pulu maintains that lawyers and doctors are merely performing their professional duties.
To ensure that we have sufficient social safety nets and we have access to legal aid, our constitution talks about access to legal aid, that everybody should have access to legal aid. In Namibia, we saw people who have been tried for treason being assisted by the government, finding them lawyers, many of them from Zimbabwe, to come and represent them. So even a government which is upset at you for treason should provide you with legal aid. This government is totally retrogressive, unprogressive, and certainly is out of its senses and does not understand what it is doing or where it is going. I think it's simply an illustration of shallowness.
Civil society actors such as Dumisani Nkomo of Habakuk Trust assess that the protest action within the country is triggered by deep-seated issues.
It's this paranoia is very worrying because we, as a country, we need to address the underlying reasons why people are protesting instead of looking at the symptoms. It would be very unfortunate if lawyers and doctors are targeted for merely trying to help people. These are professionals, and I'm sure they've got no business in looting shops and so forth, but they are professionals who are trying to help people who are in need. So this is an unfortunate attack on the institution of democracy and on fundamental freedoms and rights.
The Zimbabwe government has blamed last month's violence on the opposition MDC alliance. Citing media and civil society reports, the alliance counters that security forces were leading the charge to loot businesses. The Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission also fingered the security forces as being responsible for the violence in which 13 citizens were shot dead. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
This is Peter Clote of VOA Africa. I am in Nigeria to cover the general election. Listen to my daily reports when you tune in to our news shows. Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, and International Edition for the latest from Lagos.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the results of the February 16th Nigerian presidential and National Assembly elections. What concerns and issues swayed the voters the most? An in-depth discussion on the Nigerian elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.